I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Soul Sisters podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Katz. We have a lovely episode today with the sisters of the band First Aid Kit. I was a huge fan of theirs before they came in, and I was an even bigger fan when they left because we had an awesome conversation. They have so much interesting stuff to say about the music industry, the role of women, the experiences that they've had as sisters, as a female-fronted duo. And we got into all of it. And after we recorded this podcast, I actually had the pleasure of seeing them perform at the Beacon Theater in New York, and it was one of the best live shows I've seen in a really long time. They sold out that theater. It's a huge theater here, and the crowd was on their feet, and it's not really a venue where you generally stand, but people couldn't help but get up and dance, and it was an amazing thing to see. They are rock stars when they perform. And they're just really intelligent, thoughtful chicks when they're talking on this podcast. I can say chick because I'm a soul sister talking to my soul sisters. Okay, so we'll get to today's episode. Just a reminder, please subscribe to our iTunes channel if you haven't already. You can also watch this episode filmed on YouTube, on Billboard's YouTube channel, if you would rather see it that way. And that's it. Make sure you're following us, guys, because we have nothing but more amazing episodes like this coming at you every week with really inspiring artists. And we're just lucky and grateful to keep doing it. Okay, here's today's episode with First Aid Kit on Soul Sisters. First Aid Kit.
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We had a little location mix-up. Just feel like I should set the scene for everyone listening. We made you go all the way uptown in Manhattan. Now you're back to Midtown. And here we are. All hanging out in our little closet.
In our archive library.
Yeah. Would you guys introduce yourselves so that listeners can hear whose voice is whose?
Sure.
That will be challenging.
It will be.
I know. Well, we're going to set out the challenge. They can accept it or not.
I'm Clara.
I'm Joanna. And we're sisters.
Surprise.
So our voices are similar voices.
Yeah.
How often these days do you get to reveal that to people who did not know that you were sisters?
It happens.
Yeah,
we don't,
surprisingly.
Some people don't think that we look alike at all.
Yeah.
Do you think you look alike?
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah. Sort of.
Yeah. Kind of.
But it's not super obvious.
No.
Right.
No.
And Joanna, you're 2 years older?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
Sort of.
Two years and four months.
Well, 3 years technically, okay. But
yes.
Yeah.
And does it feel that way, that you're the older sister?
Wait. I want to get to the bottom of this.
Wait,
no.
It's 3 years, technically.
Well, I was born 1990, and you were born 93. So it's 3 years, but it's like 2 years and what, like 2 months or something.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was really important when we were kids.
Like, very important.
To make that distinction.
Yeah.
It is important to kids. Yeah. I have to point out, because I my father gave me this t-shirt, this Birds
it's
t-shirt.
Amazing.
And he's a fan of yours, and I promised that I would wear this on the show, because he's obsessed with Graham Parsons and Emmylou
so
Harris.
Are we. Yes.
Right. So I just wanted to bring that full
can
circle.
Can we have that?
No. I'll ask him to order you some.
Yes. So
from
beautiful.
Whatever weird online band t-shirt store my dad
Birds
discovers.
T-shirt.
Yeah. yeah. Anyway. So I guess, where do we start? Where should we dive right in with these two? Do you want to take the first crack at them, or shall I?
Well, you've reunited after a little period apart. A long period apart.
Not really.
No.
Like a few months.
We were ever Like, we didn't, like, split up.
You didn't?
Like, no.
No, people have,
like,
not at all.
In articles, been like, they went on a divorce.
They got a divorce, and it's like, no.
We yeah, just, like, maybe that. Didn't see each other for, like, 3 months.
We didn't see each other, but we talked all the time, and, like, yeah.
But you didn't live in London, and you were in Manchester.
Yeah, I lived in Manchester for 2 years, but I'd already moved, like a year and a half before we... So, yeah, it wasn't like I moved, and I was like, now I'm going to, like, I had done that already. Okay. Yeah, so
I'm glad we're setting this
me
record.
Too.
Yeah,
well, but it's just funny. It's fun to make it dramatic. People love a good story.
Yeah,
yeah.
I thought you guys like had not spoken for months. There was some falling out.
No,
good. I'm glad to hear that.
Not really. I mean, we're sisters, so there are.
Well, that can mean a lot of different things.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
especially in a working relationship.
Yeah, and we're under a lot of pressure, and
yeah,
you're exhausted, and yeah, it's easy to take it out on the person that you know the best. Yeah.
Do those fights, are they usually personal or do they spill into the creative?
Both.
Yeah, okay. But it's but never really personal. About, like, when we work on stuff creatively, we don't argue ever. I think.
No, we do.
We do?
Yeah, you're very picky with words.
Oh,
and, like, I want to change lyrics. And it's not true.
Okay, but not that much.
No, no.
Like, it's you want to change them and you say no?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, what's the creative...
Right?
Like, how does it work? Does one of you write primarily? Do you both try to write together different songs? How does it work?
It works. It's different for each song. But what usually tends to happen is I start writing a song. And then I'm very scatterbrained. So, like, I'll write stuff and then I'll just leave it. And I'll just get lazy. And I'm just like, oh, yeah, I don't want to do this anymore. And then I play it for Joanna. And then we start working on stuff together from there.
And similarly, you'll write lyrics and sort of sit with it, share it?
Not really, no.
Okay.
It only goes the one
way. Well, no, but you do write lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not like...
I don't have a huge collection of lyrics lying around like you.
So it's more of in the moment when we're working together, yeah.
So is there a feeling of nervousness when you share something that you, like, Joanna, will you become critical? And
yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but yeah. It's... Yeah, maybe nervous, but I feel like I know when something's good.
Mm-hmm.
Like... It's more sometimes when I'm unsure if something's good and I'm just kind of like, oh, here it is. And then Joanna will go, oh, I love this, which is really cool. But if it's something that I really believe in, even if Joanna's reaction isn't like immediately like, oh, my God, I love it. If it's like, yeah, it's okay. And I go, it's good. I know it's good. And you've always come around, I think.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, I mean, sometimes it's annoying.
I feel like it's more like you don't think it's that good. And
yeah.
I think it's great.
Yeah. And a lot of the times it's, I'll have like little ideas and I'll go like, oh, I don't know what to do with this. And Joanna goes, oh, but we can use that part that you came up with. We can put that with this. And I'll go like, no, we cannot do that. That would sound so bad. And then I try it and I'm like,
oh.
Damn it, you're right, again. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, let's, I guess, then set the record straight. So, because the story that we've kind of been living with this new album, is that you had been on tour for 7 years pretty much straight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Record. You had made four records.
Well, this is our fourth.
This is your fourth. So, three consistently since the time you were 14, you were 16, Joanna. And so, that's just a lot. You basically left high school... Never went to high school.
Yes.
That's all correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you got it right.
Yeah,
fact checking. Fact checking.
Right. And then after 7 years, you say to yourselves and each other, like, this is too much. Let's take a break in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, even if it wasn't a break from each other, just like a break from working so hard.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So that is real.
That is correct. Yes.
That happened.
Yeah.
And was the idea of exploring life as a non-working musician part of that?
Yeah.
Like, I'm imagining at 14 and 16 and then not going to high school, like, where does the, like, boy crush and the crushes and the adolescent, feelings and, time to just be sulky.
You can't have that on the road?
I don't know.
Really.
Can you?
No.
I mean, it's
different.
There's been boys, but it's always been, long distance and, it's... Not like the everyday traditional
kind of relationship that you want.
Right. No.
So were you craving that specifically, that kind of normalcy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like doing everyday chores, like doing the dishes. And like, I love that.
Yeah, it just like...
It's very romantic to me, the idea of a home.
It's also just, yeah, absolutely.
Because I can't have it.
And about identity and like, who am I? Who am I without this band?
Mm-hmm.
What do I... Yeah, I mean...
Well, it's dangerous when, like, you feel like all you're appreciated only for, like, you know, who you are in the band, and not really as a person.
Yeah.
And
but also, like, it was really interesting. Mm-hmm. I was listening to a podcast, actually. I think it was Mark Maron's podcast with Neil Patrick Harris. And it was just so funny because I saw like all these parallels to like our lives, which is not something that I was expecting, like listening to that podcast. But he was talking about like, you know, how he started out and as a teenager that he couldn't like try out like different identities or like, today I'm just gonna be really rude to everyone, or like I'm just gonna like get wasted at a party and just behave really like obnoxiously and no one's gonna care, or like, you know. But for us growing up, like I remember, like because we started so young, that like going to like a friend's party and just someone coming up to me when I was 14-15 and being like, oh, you're in that band, and already then like feeling this like responsibility to I was, what do you say?
Like a role model? Or
Like I am, I'm self-aware. This band. And, and I have to like behave. And
we wanted to. I mean, we wanted to like grow up really fast. We wanted to be like adults when we were. That was like a big deal for us.
Mm-hmm.
Like in our music, like, you know, writing these stories about like housewives and older couples. And I think... Also being a woman and being in this genre that is so male oriented, like, you know, Townes Van Sant and Graham Parsons, like it was very like fragile territory for like to be two young girls. Entering like, that.
You don't step on that world. That's
For us it was like we had to like prove ourselves and in that way be very grown up and like mature and show how serious we were all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly. Can I ask where you would perceive that feeling of you can't do that?
It's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I think it just came from within.
Or like male journalists' also, like attitude towards us. You know, their questions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And also just as a woman, like just wanting to like be a good girl, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Just feeling that pressure. And I think I think as a male musician, you get away with so much like that I would like we'd never dream of doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to do those?
I wouldn't. But just the fact that I know that I'd be judged so much harsher.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is just it's unfair.
Right. Well, it's regardless of what the behavior would be, it's the like putting yourself in someone else's shoes and imagining how they're going to judge you and see you instead of just doing whatever the fuck you want, which is, I think, what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like, drinking a lot or not drinking a lot, it's that men are not questioning whether or not they can do that.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you want to do that, Clara?
No.
I feel like we didn't want to do that.
No, I didn't. I didn't, but...
We were, like, the opposite. We were, like, we're going to be so clean and healthy.
Yeah,
and,
but I just don't know what my... I mean... Of course, I can't, but just, like, I don't know what it would have been like if I hadn't had that part.
Right,
it wasn't
an option.
Almost. Yeah, because we were working. We were working so hard.
We were on
the
road
time.
With our dad as well.
So it was just...
keeping an eye on.
Yeah, that was our life, and watching that was what we wanted to do, of course. But, it's just, like, it was funny just, like, hearing about Neil Patrick Harris' stories and just being like, oh, man, I never really, like... thought about that that was actually going on for us as well.
Totally. So when you did take that time out and you tried to understand who you were outside of the band, what did you discover? Were there any surprises?
Well, that we were okay without it, that we still had lives.
I feel like if the band stopped today, like it would be like if it all ended, it would be fine. Like I'd do great. You know, I think that was a relief to feel like you're loved like by friends and family in a different way than just like always talking about First Aid Kit and building your whole life around that. Because it is like, it's so time consuming. It takes like, you know, it is our lives in a way. But to just know that, you know, it wouldn't be a catastrophe. It's really reassuring.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. How long did you have that where you weren't really on the road and working at a new project?
It was sort of split up because we did things as we like to do. Like we did some projects here and there and some shows, like small side things. But probably like almost a year at home, I would say, in total.
Yeah. But we were like, we were still sort of working on things and writing. But it wasn't, we didn't have a deadline where it was like, okay, then we're going to go on tour. And
Wow, but it's interesting, like a year at home not being on tour, but yet still working and writing, like that's not a break in the way that
But
we had portrayed. six months off that were just completely off.
We didn't have to listen to music or write songs or anything creative.
But I still did because
Six months without music.
Well, is that horrible. When you put out You Are the Problem here?
No. So this was earlier. So we took the break in the last show that we played was a festival in Sweden in 2015, the summer, August 2015. Yeah. And then we didn't, then we met up in LA in April 2016 to write the record. So we had that time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But that particular song was never going to be on the record.
No.
Okay. Were you able to channel some kind of anger in that song that wouldn't have a place on a First Aid Kit album?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it would have, but it just because...
Maybe our next record will be that angry, the whole 10 angry
amazing.
Songs.
Yeah.
You know. Just because the subject matter of the record was so personal, and it's, you know, it's a breakup record, and we didn't want to, like... have a song like that be in there because it would be kind of confusing.
Involved in the relationship. I mean, it would be
that song had something to do with that relationship, which it didn't at all. That was just a completely separate thing. So
for those who aren't familiar with the song, can you just explain real quick?
Sure.
What
well,
it?
Yeah. You're well, it was. Here. It was written because we'd been reading a lot about this rape case at Stanford University. This guy, Brock Turner, I hate that I know his name, but, you know, so he goes.
It's funny because in the press that I've read about this song, they never mention what rape inspired the song.
We didn't want to. We don't want to, like, spread his name. You
got
know?
It,
like,
got
yeah.
it.
Yeah, that's not what that it's was about. Kind of, yeah. But that was what inspired it. Just reading about that because he got 6 months in prison.
He got out
of three. And I mean, it was just. But the thing that kind of that was so frustrating and moving and everything about it was like there were three letters that were written that were just like so interesting and horrific, like. One was from the victim's point of view, and it was just, like, heartbreaking reading about this woman and how this had affected her, how she had been treated. And then he wrote a letter, Brock, where he basically – I mean, it was just so ridiculous to read it and just be like, wow, you have no concern for this other human being's life.
Right.
You are just concerned with like
yourself.
Yourself and blaming like youth culture and alcohol.
Well, his father wrote one too.
And then his dad wrote a letter too, which were the famous 20 minutes of action, which he described this horrible thing that his son had done. And life should be
bullshit.
I just read all of that. Yeah. And I was just like so, so angry. And the song just came.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this stuff normally on your guys' radar? And by stuff, I mean, I guess, like, what's big in American news and politics and women's issues and...
Yeah. We do read, like, American blogs and things like that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it was a big thing in Sweden, like...
No, not
in particular.
But I remember it being really big. Yeah. And, yeah, because we'd, like... Jezebel. And it was on BuzzFeed.
And I listened
to, like... more podcasts American politics podcasts as well, so yeah, definitely. But
I was just gonna say I've just kind of recently picked up on this side of you guys, which I think is this awesome addition to the concept of you guys as these people who make this beautiful kind of Americana folk music that feels very steeped in a certain genre and history in American music, but doesn't normally carry a very political or feminist bent to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are starting to make music and to speak about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an awesome collision of those two that like should go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that you're creating that is very new in your own. You know, I mean, I saw you guys told Lenny Letter recently that you want to crush the patriarchy. And I was like, yes, lady.
Yeah. Well, like so many interviews to end, like, oh, do you have anything to add? So I always add that.
Yeah.
Like, hello.
That's awesome.
Well, I mean, for us, it's funny because it's something that's like so
obvious.
Because we grew up, I mean, our mom is like a super badass feminist. And,
and
so that's something that we've always talked about.
We've always had the perspective on anything that we see or read, like, you know, the feminist perspective. So it's not shocking or like it's so obvious to us.
Yeah. But
like,
I think
the rest of the world is like catching. I feel like that now.
Well, but sure. I think I'm learning as well.
Oh yeah, you know, you never fully learn, like finish, but
I just see all the patterns more clearly all the time, and it's really hard. It's really frustrating.
Well, once you see them, you can't unsee them.
It's very true. So, but I mean, you know, you are the problem here. It sounds like it could be the anthem for me too.
Right.
But it came out months and months and months before that.
Yeah,
you know?
But
it was
feel
in
like,
the air.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I feel like it was that wasn't. Yeah. I mean, and it's just it's so strange that we're talking about it now and that we haven't talked about it. Like, that's sort of a part of it, too. It's just like, oh, now people care?
Right.
Oh,
yeah.
We're actually, now people are listening to women?
I know.
Oh, interesting.
And I read that you said somewhere, like, why aren't the men talking about it? Like, we have to come to interviews and every time talk about this.
Always,
and,
always.
You know, it's a double-edged sword. Like, we need to do it, so it's a good thing, but it's also, like, unfortunate that we need to do it, but men aren't doing it.
No.
And I'm wondering if you feel like we, the press, media, like, is there something that we're missing or that we're doing, you know, not enough of? Or, like, is the way that it's being handled, you know, sufficient to you?
No.
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 It's not. No,
no,
it
not at all.
Like, in these interviews, of course we need to talk about these things.
Yeah.
And you're not, you know, upset by that because... that's what we have to do.
No, I don't think it's anything. Like, I mean, of course, I don't mind talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not the problem. I mean, that's
totally.
The thing.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And we're calling these things like women's issues.
Right.
But
it's
men who have the issue because the men are the people that are raping women.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
they're not
starting
podcasts about that.
Right. No.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it yet. At least,
yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of men who are doing great things, but not enough.
Well, it's
obviously,
like the letter that over 2,000 Swedish female musicians signed. I believe it's female musicians, right?
Yeah,
it's not just, and that's an interesting thing. Like, why aren't these letters in support of the movement?
Well, I can tell you about that specifically. Mm-hmm. There was a Facebook group, and it was just for women, and because people didn't feel safe having men be invited into it.
Well, the Swedish music industry is so small. Like, everyone knows each other.
So we just like had to like keep it like
really contained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was so like crazy to have that. Like, it was this beautiful thing, and it was also like just
horrifying.
So, I mean, but it was finally so many, like, it was crazy. So many people who were writing on there who are just like, I've never talked about this before in my life.
Within Swedish industry, not just globally, their experience as a musician touring internationally or whatever. Was it specifically contained to the Swedish experience?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it was like, this is what's been done to me. And there were so many women who are just, their stories, like, just reading all of them, and but then like seeing the response, and just like all of us just like coming together and just be like, we're here for you, we're listening, we love you, we have your back, and just feeling that was so incredible too. But
can I ask, you guys are basically the head of a big business at this point, the business of the band. Are there things that you implement within that business that help to achieve the goal of crushing the patriarchy, like in terms of who you hire, who you work with?
I wish we did better. I feel like, you know, I wish we have
still
like,
working on it.
We're like four women on the tour, including us.
And then eight men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's, but I think that we do have a good, like, I don't know, working environment.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we like, we really speak out about stuff. Mm-hmm.
And the dudes that we're working with are very, they don't have that kind of macho attitude or anything.
Right. Yeah,
and
we've definitely had that in the past. That, like,
yeah,
where we were just like, oh, this is
not going to work.
No, yeah. I mean, it's just so like poisonous. The macho, like that environment is just like, soul crushing. Like, I really think, I feel really bad for men for having to like
toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
I wonder what it was like when you were 14, 15, 16 and being like young women in the industry. Like, to earn the respect.
No one wants to listen to young
general,
women.
Yeah, like young women. I mean, you're like literally, you know, new at this and female. Yeah. It's like, must have been doubly.
I think we were sort of naive and sort of ignoring
a
lot of it.
I wonder if the awareness is just so new, and now you could probably look back and say, Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. No, of course. I mean, I
but at least having each other also to listen to.
Yeah. I think that made a huge difference. Yeah. Like, and us touring with our dad, like, you know, being sisters in a family, we're very strong and protected in that sense. Like, it's way worse if you're a solo artist.
I mean, we've really thought about that, especially after being in that Facebook group and seeing all these women's hearing their stories and just being like, wow, that could have really been me, but we were always together, and you know, we were safe because of that. But
does it feel like a small community? You mentioned how Sweden has just like, it's a very, everyone knows each other. Does that feel like a supportive environment? Is there the opportunity to feel that?
You know?
Now it is. Yeah. Now that we have this Facebook group.
Yeah.
Definitely. But in general, I mean, I feel like when we started, there were a lot of like female artists older who helped us.
Yeah,
who helped
us out. Yeah, for sure.
Like Karen Dre from The Knife and Fever Ray, she signed us on her label.
Yeah.
Like we got another offer, but it was like a really terrible deal. It was this like 360. Like they would take money from like all our merch sales and
touring
and manage us, everything. And we had this meeting and they were like, talking about how they're gonna make us sexy, and we were like, I mean, 14 and 16. Yeah, it was really awkward. And she just came in, like, basically ripped the contract. And was
like,
I'll sign you on my label. You know, you can do whatever you want. Just feel free to do that. And so that was a great way to start.
For sure.
Speaking of Swedish musicians, they're awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, there was an Atlantic article by Nolan Feeney, Why is Sweden So Good at Pop Music? And it basically lays out the reasons, like the actual reasons why. Is it fosters? Well, it's because no other small country has the right combination of language skills. So English language, cultural values, where musicians are upheld and celebrated and given the support, actual financial support through public policy, where the Swedish Arts Council gives out millions of dollars to regional acts, national, international concert venues, everything. And then, you know, when you have all this talent in this small place, it's going to feed off each other.
Yeah.
And so it literally, there's a reason why Sweden is this hotbed. And so I wonder if you've experienced it that way, and if touring and experiencing the world elsewhere you've felt the difference of a place that's supportive versus, you know, you've been on now many labels, several labels, and, you know, if you've just found that there's a more supportive environment there than kind of elsewhere?
Well, we got like money also from the Swedish, a grant to make our first record and our EP. I don't think we could have made it otherwise.
No.
Like, because we were like all work, like dad quit his job to go on tour with us. And so we were all on our mom's salary. And she's like a film teacher. I mean, she, you know.
And she works for an independent art house cinema.
Yeah, so you can guess that's not like, a lot of money. Right.
And I mean, the ideology behind like music and art is important enough where you can
as
leave
Americans,
high school.
Like very it's hard to
right.
fathom.
Yeah. And the government supporting it. Mm-hmm. Like that's just such a way to foster the arts that that's foreign to us.
Yeah.
No, and I think it was shocking to us just touring like how you're treated when you start out as a band. Like because in Sweden I still feel like if you have a show they take care of you. Like when you come to the venue they treat you well even if you're not a huge star. But in like the UK when you start off it's like you're treated like shit. I mean you're nothing. Like it's just it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like if you're lucky you might get a beer like as like as a fee.
I remember that cuz we were playing and I think it was like 15 and we got like there were only beers in our dressing room and I was like I can't drink. Like why are you giving me beer? I want water. Do you can I have a bottle of water?
What's the drinking age in Sweden?
18.
So how does it feel to be back on tour? were you ready?
I think so. I mean, we're never really ready because it's so exhausting. It's, like I always forget.
I forget like, how much work it is.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah,
like no matter how much energy and rest you store up beforehand,
you're traveling all the time. So physically, you're just never like I don't know. It's not the same as being at home and having like a regular job. You just can't compare.
Yeah, no.
And just the fact that like you can't go home at the end of the night
or would do
have
anything
a weekend
for that.
Off and just it's hard. It was really hard.
Yeah.
But it's also really, really, really fun.
And we were worried because we've been gone for like, I mean, it's 4 years in between records.
Yeah.
So we were like, people have forgotten about us.
Yeah, they're not going to come.
They've moved
the
on.
Doesn't seem to be the case.
No. We're like, we don't take it for granted.
No.
Like, really don't.
No. But this whole tour sold out.
Amazing.
And
all
our
shows this year so far.
Crazy. Yeah. So
it's incredible.
Yeah.
You, right out of the gate, had so many opportunities to play for and with. So many of your heroes, which is amazing.
Yes.
Do you have your sights set on like some new goal or some new artist or something that, for the future that would be exciting?
I mean, it's just like those opportunities that we've had to play for people or play with people have been so, like, it's not ever something that we like.
Planned.
You don't plan to like make Paul Simon cry.
No.
That was Emmy Lou.
Emmy Lou.
Paul
okay.
gave him the standing up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not even in your like. You
no, of course like, not. You know, it's just insane.
Yeah.
We're open to those moments. Like, if they happen. Yeah.
Was it true that like you played a festival and Flute Foxes were there and they just and he like saw you? Robin,
that was horrible, though.
Why was that horrible?
Oh, no, but that wasn't... Well, he saw the YouTube video that we did.
Yeah. But then you got on stage with him,
and it was, like, the wrong key, and we were... I mean, that was, like...
I mean, for us, like, we hadn't practiced that. Like, we knew the song, but we had to change the key, because it's a really, like, tricky song. And then we... he invited us up there, and we were like, okay, great. And then we start singing, and it's just like, okay, it's either too high or too low. Like, I can't physically sing the song.
And there was no rehearsal or anything?
No.
He was that's like, so you want to come up? And we were like, of course we do. But then
it was really awkward.
Yeah. But
then we met up last year in Stockholm.
We got to do it again. And then we rehearsed like a lot.
Like crazy. So we got our revenge.
Yeah.
Right. 10 years
that's
later.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you guys are pretty much at the point now where someone is going to cover your song and then perform it for you. Not that there aren't still many idols for you guys to cover, but I feel like it's going to come back around.
Yeah.
Last question, because I know... You guys have a show tonight.
Ooh, we do.
But I read something. Someone wrote this really cute op-ed in the Times this weekend. Did you see this, Dee? It was this guy who was trying to figure out why he loves the song Born to Run and his brother doesn't. Neither of them were even alive when that song came out. And so he dug into some Spotify data and he figured out that if you look back at a lot of songs, the demographic of people who listened the most to those were between like the ages of 12 and 14 when the song came out, which made me think of you guys in a way, because I'm I'm curious to know when this music entered your life. Mm-hmm. And if this pattern holds for you, these are also influences that were not in their prime when you were a kid. So yeah. How did this music come to you?
Well, I was 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Surprise.
Yeah. And I started listening to Bright Eyes.
Okay.
That was my first.
And that came
like,
out around that time.
It came out in 2005 when I was, I was 12. And I'm Wide Awake It's Morning, that record, which is like their classic folk record. And for me, it was like the simplicity of it was so new to me. Like everything that I had, we both, we loved music always and were singing, but it was always kind of more pop oriented. And so finding something that was just like, oh, this is just a guy like singing and playing guitar and it's so moving. How is this, how does this work? Like, oh, could I get a guitar and just try to do this myself? You know, that, so that was, what kind of started it. And then we kind of, it became almost like a project for us to start to like dig into like country and folk music. It, so it was like, okay, well.
So it was through Bright Eyes that was the gateway?
But there's so much good music at that time, like in that genre, like freak, like Devander Banhart and Feist and Coco Rossi.
Yeah,
and then Fleet Foxes came and Bon Iver. And, I mean, there's so much.
But I remember like, okay, so like Bright Eyes, they like Bob Dylan, Who did Bob Dylan listen to when he started out? And like,
the Carter Family.
And, you know, like that was really cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how we like, we came upon like Graham Parsons and Townes Van Zandt and all those people that just, I mean, for me, that music will always be like super special. And maybe that is because of that golden age. 12 to 14.
Nostalgia. Early adolescence.
And now you've collaborated with Connor Oberst?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dreams.
Yeah. Dreams crazy. Exactly. And made two records with Mike Mogis, who was like our dream producer when we started out. We were like, oh my God, if we could work with anyone, it'd be Mike Mogis. And now he's a good friend of ours. So crazy.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thanks, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And good luck. Keep the stamina up. Mm-hmm. And
the record is Ruins. It is gorgeous.
Thank you.
So good. Cool. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks.
I'll be your Emmy Lewin. I'll be your June. You'll be my Just sit.